According to the computers, we have landed at about 31.7 degrees north and 35.2 degrees east, so we know where we are. And we have landed, according to the computers, around 5 BC, and so we know when we are. And since we know where we are, at least from a GPS standpoint, and we know when we are from a time standpoint, I think it is fair to say that we should get out of this ship and go and explore and see what we find. So, as you exit with me, I think the first thing you notice, just as I do, is that the time of day that we have just stepped into is very different from the time of day we stepped into 2 weeks ago when we traveled and last week when we traveled. The first week we traveled, remember, we stepped into the early morning around 8:30-ish. And last week we stepped into the mid-afternoon, but this week, right as we step out of the TARDIS, you can see how dark it is. So this is clearly nighttime. The town we've just stepped into feels a little bit bigger than last week when we were in Nazareth, not because we can see the outskirts of town, but if you look with me, you can see the boundary of light where the town comes to an end, because you can see that it's not so late at night that all the lanterns have been turned off. Everybody seems to have their lights on in the house. And so my guess would be that we are post-dinner time, somewhere around the late evening. As you look out to the boundary of town, you see the boundary because the light comes to a screeching halt, and beyond that is just a sea of dark. Except for one thing. You'll notice with me, if you look into the distance, there is a hue of light on the horizon, kind of the same as you would experience when you're driving into a city and you haven't yet gotten to the city where you can see the lights. You just see over the horizon that glow that says, the city's getting closer. And we see something like that on the horizon. So let's begin our journey. As we walk into the streets here, you can look at the architecture and notice that we are again in a town that is clearly Jewish because of the architecture. The houses are relatively small. They're stacked up a little closer together in this town than in Nazareth last week, but they have that same feel. A house built with a room added onto it and a room added onto it, as would be typical in Jewish culture for the groom to add a room onto his father's house when he invites his bride to come and be his wife and live with him. And so we're seeing that same feel. As we walk through the streets, you'll notice there's a bit of scurrying around, but not much. Hardly anyone on the streets. Everyone seems to be in their homes, but it is a buzz. You can hear the conversations, can't you? There's lots of conversation going on, lots of light. The kinds of conversation we're picking up as we're walking by window for window is the kind of conversation that sounds a little more excitable than the ordinary family hanging out. In fact, as we look into a window or two, you'll notice that all the houses seem very full, like a Thanksgiving, if you will. That it just seems like the conversations are people that haven't seen each other in a while. Lots of different things going on. Laughter, kids running around inside. Small houses, tight spaces. You'll also notice as we walk in the midst of these conversations, very few people on the street, just a scurrying about here and there. And that makes sense in a town like this, because if we are in that Middle Eastern section in Israel right now, and based on the GPS, we're in that region, then this time of night, at this time in history, two things are true. One, there are wild animals that can be about. And two, if thieves are going to come out, they come out in the dark. So try to stay off the streets is generally a good rule. And certainly, without a doubt, make sure that by the time the sun sets, you are inside the boundaries of any town's limit where the lanterns and lights will light up enough where it makes it a little less obvious for a thief to enter in. This is dangerous territory to be out in the dark. There are a few out there, but they are, I promise you, well-trained to be out there. So as we continue to walk down the street, you might, as I am, begin to wonder why we've landed here in particular. And as we continue to walk, we're approaching the end of town now, the boundary where the light comes to an end. You will hear with me, if you listen carefully, something interesting. Just beyond the boundary of light of the town, you will hear heavy breathing from a man. You can tell. It's the kind of breathing that doesn't just feel like exhaustion, it feels like anxiety. The kind of breathing that's hurried, that's moving quickly, and you hear the whisper, come on, come on, come on. right behind that breathing and that voice, there is a groaning, the kind of groaning that a human being does when they are in pain. And you know, as I do, that the likelihood is that this person who is anxiously coming out of the darkness has someone injured with them, which makes sense if you were out in the dark after sunset. You should have been in town by now if you are traveling. And you can hear the hooves of an animal right behind him. So my guess would be an injured person on the back of an animal being brought into town as quickly as possible. As the animal and the one leading it breaks into the light, we recognize a face, don't you? It's the person on the donkey. We've seen her before. In fact, just last week we encountered her when we were in Nazareth, just a little bit past in terms of time. And we recognize immediately the woman on the donkey is Mary, the one that we encountered with Gabriel last week. But this must be a little further in time because she is clearly pregnant and she's not injured. She is in labor. That's what's going on. And no wonder Joseph seems so incredibly anxious. From a planning perspective, they should have been in town by now. But it seems in their travel, they made the determination to try to make it to Bethlehem on this very night instead of stopping to camp. And whoever they were with got ahead of them because they were saying, you just go ahead, you just go ahead. And they went slower than they thought. I'm not surprised. You have to stop in regularity for Mary to catch her breath when she's in labor. But now it's pushed past sunset. No wonder Joseph is anxious. And it also means we know exactly where we are, doesn't it? We are in the town of Bethlehem right now, and we are in a moment in history that, for the record, I have wanted to be for a long time, because we are on an evening where Joseph and Mary are entering the town of Bethlehem, so we know that on this very night, it is likely, no, not likely, it is the very night that Mary will bring into this world a child, and something dramatic will change. And so as they enter town, what I want to do, I know you do too, is run over, grab Joseph and say, it's okay, you made it, you made it. And I want to tell Mary, come here and pick her off that animal and just carry her. But we can't do that because we are here to observe, not to intervene. So we step slightly back into the shadows to let the moment unfold before us. Joseph comes into town and the first thing he does, it's what you would do and I would do, it makes sense, is goes to the first door and he bangs on the door. He bangs on the door because he needs to get inside. He bangs and he bangs and nobody answers. It makes sense that nobody answers because town is full. It is the year of the great census, and so everybody's come into town that is of the line of David, which means the extended family that you haven't seen in a long time is now visiting. This is Thanksgiving on steroids, Christmas on steroids. Your house is full. Not only do you have your extended family in the house, and you have their extended family in the house, but you probably have some friends that didn't have family living in town that you knew from before, or you knew their parents' parents, and they're in your house as well. These houses are small, they don't have a lot of room, so every part of the floor is covered in mats and everybody is sleeping in close quarters. And so at night, there's been a lot of banging on a lot of doors. And the best thing to do after a while is instead of answering the door every time and saying, can I help you? Do you have any room to put us? And just going, no, you just don't answer the door. Plus this time of night, when someone's banging on a door, you don't know who it's gonna be, so your best bet is to leave the door shut. Joseph bangs on the first door with no response, moves to the second door. This time as he bangs, we watch him and we hear him, somebody please open, somebody, my wife, please. Nobody opens. He moves quickly to the third door, bangs again. This time the door cracks open. It's a woman. Immediately she sees Mary and she, you can see it in her eyes, has compassion. But there's practicality. Her house is literally jam-packed. So she says to Joseph, you can overhear the conversation. I'm so sorry, sir. I would love to help. But literally, I mean, she opens the door. He looks and you can see there is no room. Every nook and cranny of this house is filled with mats. My family, my friends, people I don't know, they're here. I can't bring you in. If I put you in here, you'd literally sleep on top of somebody and your wife is in labor. This is not the place to birth a child. I'm so sorry. I can't help. Joseph, with his head down, we can watch him, turns and thanks the lady. for her hopeful hospitality and starts, but the lady, as she pulls the door closed, doesn't quite close it. I feel what she feels. She can't let them go, so she pulls the door back open and says, "Sir, come back here." Joseph turns and she says, I don't have much, but we have a cave. It's not far from here. It's where we keep our animals. And our animals have been safe in that cave every night for as long as I've known. It is a safe place. It is warm. It gets you out of all of this. And I believe if you went to the cave, you would be safe there. Plus, with what's happening with your wife, that might be a great space because there'll be nobody else in the cave and you'll have some privacy for this event. And Joseph, without hesitation, accepts the offer. Thank you. That would be wonderful. This is a big win for them. They're going to be in shelter, but they're not going to be jammed into a little house with a bunch of other people trying to give birth to a child. They will have some solace, though it will be with a few cows. And so the woman calls over a young man. Would you take them down to the cave quickly and get back quickly? It's a strapping young man, my guess is cousin, maybe son. And he quickly runs Mary and Joseph down the road. Do you want to follow? Because I want to follow. I want to see where this goes. So we follow them down the road. As we're following them down the road, did you feel that? Because I felt it. It's subtle, I know, but you got to pay attention. We don't get to travel back in time often. So when we're here, you got to pay attention to every little nuance. It was a bit of a breeze, not much, but misplaced, not the kind of breeze you'd expect on the streets, the kind that doesn't blow past you, it blows through you, and you can feel the goosebumps. The second that breeze hit me, it sparked memory. I hope it did for you as well. A breeze like this means that something supernatural is about to occur. And if we're in Bethlehem, on the night that Mary and Joseph are arriving, there's another set of events that are going to occur near town that we will remember because we are from 2018 and we know the story. Do you know what events I'm talking about? It happens a mile, maybe two from here. Right now, just outside of the beautiful light of the town, in the darkness, there are a few people out there who dare to live in the dark during the night. And they are shepherds. They keep sheep. And in this very place tonight, those shepherds are going to encounter something insanely crazy that frankly I want to see. And right now, Mary and Joseph are going to roll to a cave, get settled in, and I would just prefer that they go do that. So let's us break from here and go head out and see if maybe we can catch the events that occur just outside of Bethlehem. Now to do that, we're going to have to move quickly and we're going to have to move into the dark. Now I told you we should never go in the dark, but with a crowd this size, I don't think we're going to have any trouble with any thieves. So I think it's okay if we do that. Now, the best bet, if we're going to do this, is to head toward the light that we saw earlier. Why? Because we know what that is now. If we're in Bethlehem, we are 6 miles south of Jerusalem. And the one thing that's lit up in a really, really big way every night is the temple. So the glow that you're seeing in the distance that we haven't quite been able to put our finger on, we now know is Jerusalem. And we know that if the shepherds are going to be keeping sheep near Bethlehem, they're not keeping the sheep for Bethlehem. They're keeping the sheep for Jerusalem because it is in the temple every day that there are sacrifices brought, and they are the shepherds that would be keeping the sheep that would be utilized for the sacrifices. So if they're going to be keeping sheep, they're not going to be south of Bethlehem. They're going to be north of Bethlehem, south of Jerusalem, in the fields in between. And so if we make our way toward the dome of light, we should be in the vicinity, and I promise you, when the angels show up, we'll know, because when they come, it gets light, and right now it's dark. And so we're going to make our way. And just FYI, watch your footing, because these hills can be tricky. As we make our way toward the dome of light, it happened suddenly, but you didn't quite even see it. I did. It doesn't come with a big dramatic something or other. It's just a quick shift of the hills. Did you notice that? The hill shadows just shifted back and forth for an instant. And so you and I know now that just around the corner somewhere, he has arrived. We've got to move quickly now. Listen. It's dark again. Listen. There it is. I knew it. Whenever an angel shows up, people get afraid. Did you hear it? It was muffled, but it was loud enough. That voice from a man. Please, sir, mercy. Please, sir, have mercy. We need to move in that direction because that's where it's going to happen. As we're coming across the first hill, listen carefully now. I thought so. There it is, the voice. Do you remember last week when we heard Gabriel's voice for the first time? It felt like a bucket of peace washing over us. It's like all the anxiety just went away as he said those words, "Do not be afraid." And we just hear it again from a single voice, quiet but bold. "Fear not, my friends." And you feel it, the peace coming over you. We can't quite see it yet, but we can hear it now. And the conversation begins. "Fear not, my friends, for I come with good news of great joy." Like, you understand what we're encountering here right now, right? Last week, it was the very first time that we had the privilege to hear the name Jesus uttered on this planet in the context of the Messiah, when Gabriel said to Mary, "And you shall call him Jesus." And that name will become and has become the greatest name in all of eternality. The name to which every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. The King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. And that was the first time we heard the name. But this time, it is the first time we hear the good news, the gospel, that is always intricately attached to that name, because that name is the good news. He is the gospel. And here the angel says, "I have good news for you of great joy." And the question is, what is this great joy? And the shepherds, knowing their context, would know immediately when the next words come. Listen now. "I have good news of great joy. This very night in the city of David," which FYI is Bethlehem, "will be born unto you a child. And this child will be the Messiah, the Christ, the Lord, the one who has come to bring peace to mankind." Man, that is good news. And I'll tell you what, it's good news to us because we know the whole story. It was great news to them because they, like so many in their time, had been waiting tirelessly for this moment to come in history and had no idea when it would come, just that it would come at some point, hopefully. See, these shepherds, don't think of them as uneducated, because they're just not. Nobody in the Jerusalem area and nobody in the culture of Israel, for that matter, would be uneducated. All of them grew up in the synagogue, all of them learning the Pentateuch, the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, memorizing them from scratch. All of them traveling through all the prophecies about the promises of God. All of them memorizing most of the Old Testament. A few of them would be chosen as disciples by rabbis. The rest, who couldn't quite measure up, would become shepherds or would become carpenters or would become fishermen, would become a number of different things. Nothing wrong with that, don't get me wrong. It's just what they would be. These guys know exactly what the prophecies about the Messiah were. And the second that angel spoke the words, "Unto you a child is born this night in the city of David," it would be reminiscent of the great prophecy of Isaiah. "For unto you a child is given, unto you a king is born, and he will be of the line of David." Oh, the shepherds know what this means. But it's the next part that I find so fascinating. As we listen in, the angel is not done. Next, he says something super odd. He says to these shepherds, listen now, he says, "And you will know when you find him, because he will be wrapped in cloth and he will be laying in a trough." Now, that's profound, because if the angel had no intent for the shepherds to go and look for Jesus, where would he have stopped? He would have stopped at, "FYI, get on your knees, big night, big night. Just want to let you guys know, have a great night, ciao." But what does he do? He says, "When you go looking for him, you will find him this way." So the first thing that I notice as I hear this conversation is that it is very clear the angel intends for the shepherds to do what? Go find Jesus. And second of all, what's terribly profound about this, and I think personally, though we know much more than they would, for the shepherds, I'm sure is currently very confusing, is that the angel would say that this baby is wrapped in cloth and is in an animal's trough. Because where are we standing? Pay attention now. We're standing right between Jerusalem, where the temple and the palace is, the most profound space in all of Israel. And we're standing right behind or right in front of a little town called Bethlehem. And the reality is they're close enough that you could think of the whole thing as sort of the city of David if you had to. So if the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Messiah, the Savior, the Christ was going to be born, where do you think he's going to be born? That's right, Jerusalem, right in front of us. Where? Probably in the temple, my guess, the Holy of Holies. I mean, can you imagine a more sacred moment? And so if he's in the Holy of Holies, in the temple, in Jerusalem, who doesn't get to go in there? I'll tell you, anybody, frankly, because only one person enters the Holy of Holies once a year. They have a rope tied around their ankle so that if the cleansing they went through wasn't perfect and they die in the presence of God, that we drag them out because nobody else can go in there and get them. The high priest once a year, because the Holy of Holies you do not enter, because the presence of God you do not have access to, not as a human, because sin dies when it encounters God. But the angel didn't say, you will know him because you will find him in the Holy of Holies. You will know him because you will see him from a distance in the palace. No, he said, you'll go find him and he'll be in an animal's trough and he'll be wrapped in some cloth. And so the shepherds sit. Just taking that in for a second, suddenly it happens, suddenly, without warning. The gates of heaven open before us. Now we can see the light. It is beyond anything we've ever seen. It goes and stretches up into what seems to be an eternity. And a host of heavenly bodies begin to launch out in a song like nothing I have ever heard, frankly. Glory to God in the highest, and peace on earth to mankind. Glory to God in the highest, and peace on earth to mankind. I mean, I could live right here. Frankly, it's done. I'm finished. This is as good as it gets. And then, as quickly as they came, they're gone. Have you ever had to get up at night, go to the bathroom, and it's late, like 3 a.m, and you get up and it's dark, but your eyes are used to the dark, so you can see like the shape of things, so you don't run into a door or a closet. So you make your way into the bathroom and you realize in that moment you're gonna have to turn the light on, and you're just devastated because you know as soon as you turn that light on, it is gonna sear through your eyes into your brain and try to kill you. And so you close your eyes and you turn the light on, and then you open one eye halfway to try to adjust, but it's so painful. And so you do one eye at a time, eventually both creep open, and you kind of go and deal with what you need to deal with. And as you come out, the real moment of fear is the next one, because now your eyes have adjusted to the light. And what happens when you turn that little puppy off? Those shadows you saw that helped you navigate to the bathroom, they are gone. It is a sea of absolute dark. And you stare, you know, your eyes as wide as you can have them. You're like, come on, I want to see something. But you see nothing. That's exactly what this feels like. I mean, what we saw with those angels was so bright, and the second they disappeared, we can't even see the silhouettes of the shepherds right now because the moon that was out isn't enough to help our eyes adjust, but we can hear their voices. It's almost immediate. Can you hear it? The first voice, what should we do? What should we do? A second voice, I think we should go now to Bethlehem. Third voice, go to Bethlehem now? Are you kidding me? To do what? To find the baby. Find the baby? How on earth do you think we're going to find a baby? Walk into Bethlehem. Hello? Anybody have a baby? I mean, it's late. We get Micah. You always have something to say about anything that we're called to do. Something to say. We're watching the sheep for the night. If we leave the sheep, do you have any idea what happens to us in the morning? Sheep? That's all you can think about is sheep? We just saw an angel. There's a baby, the Messiah. What do you think, Jeremiah? I think we should go. I agree. Great. Let's go. There they go. I can hear their feet. It sounds like Micah's going with them. I love it. Let's follow. As we follow them into Bethlehem, we're hearing the conversation. They're just traveling through. You can hear it. Just speaking to each other. Oh my gosh, do you think this is what the prophet was speaking about? Do you think this is what he meant? Do you think this is what that meant? Do you think this is the one? What do you think is going to happen? Is Israel going to be rescued from Rome finally? I don't know. We need to find the baby. How are we going to find the baby? Micah, I told you, God will show us. God will show us. God will show us. What does that even mean? You know what? Just keep walking. As they're going through this, something is jolted in my memory. You know that in this very moment, as we're walking back into Bethlehem with the shepherds, do you know that in this very moment, recorded in the book of Matthew, an event is taking place that is nowhere near us right now? In fact, it is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles from here. As far as we know, there is someone watching the skies on this very night. They study the skies. They're part of a culture that has nothing to do with this one, far in the east, very likely residual from the great Babylonians. And one of those men is watching the stars this very night, and he finds something odd. On this night, there seems to be a heavenly body in the sky that wasn't there the night before. Now, we know that that's not possible. He knows that that's not possible. And so immediately, he's curious about how he could have missed this particular heavenly body. Tomorrow, he will go and visit some of his friends and say, hey, last night, the oddest thing I was watching, and I saw this particular light. Have you guys seen it before? And they will all go, what are you talking about? There's no light there. And then that next night, that'll be tomorrow night, they'll go back and look again, and he will show them that light. And they'll all be fascinated by what they see. Over the next few weeks, they will watch intently this new light in the sky. And what they will discover will be absolutely fascinating, like nothing they've ever seen, because this light will move. Not the kind of movement you expect by the rotation of the earth, but the kind of movement that's actually movement. It is no longer where it was the night before. And as it begins to move more and more over the next few weeks, they will begin to dig and research. Now, what's super cool is the best we can tell, they will have access to documents that were probably brought into their experience 500 years earlier when Daniel arrived in Babylon under the great captivity when Nebuchadnezzar came and got them. And when Daniel was brought in with his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because of some supernatural events that would take place in their story, they would become profoundly important to King Nebuchadnezzar and to all of his wise men. And they would become a voice in that circle with great influence. Without a doubt, Daniel will have brought with him the great scriptures of old, including the book of Numbers, in which Balaam, who was also in his time a wise man of sorts, made a prophecy in Numbers 24 and said that there will be a king that will arrive as a star that will appear. And one of those men, researching 500 years later, in the next few weeks, will remember something about a star and find that connection, and then will say, who brought these documents? And remember that it was Daniel. They will go and study Daniel's documents, and likely in the beautiful prophecy that God gave Daniel, which unpacks the timing of time and space in many ways, they will discover that this moving body in heaven is leading them to someone. And out of great curiosity, they will pack their bags and they will make a great journey to this very town that we are standing in right now, or about to anyways. They will only arrive probably 18 to 20 months from now. But the timing will be impeccable, as always, with the great author God. Because when they arrive, right about that time, Herod, who will have become jealous of this prophecy of a new king of the Jews, will go out and do something absolutely terrible. He will find every baby under the age of two and slaughter them with the hopes of killing the king. An angel will appear to Mary and Joseph and say they need to go to Egypt to go and hide Jesus, but they won't have the resources to do that. But for one event, that these men will arrive and bring with them gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh, which are, in that time, expensive metals and spices that would resource them for a journey to Egypt where they will save the Messiah. God has written this story before any of the events have even occurred, and we stand here with the shepherds as it unfolds hundreds of miles away, what will be important 18 months from now. The shepherds are getting away from us, so we must follow them. We head into town with them, and as we turn the first corner back into Bethlehem, we've caught back up with them, and you can hear Micah again, can't you? All right, what's the plan, Jeremiah? You said we'd find the baby. Where are we going to find the baby? Do we just walk the streets until the night is over? And he's going on and on. And I want to kind of say to Micah, if you would keep your mouth shut, then maybe we could listen and we would hear something important. But Jeremiah beats me to it. If you keep your mouth shut, maybe we'll be able to listen and hear something important. And just as he says it, you'll hear it. Do you hear it? The singing. This singing is familiar to us, not to them. We heard it last week. Do you remember what drew us into the home where we encountered Mary? It was her singing. And I hear it again. She's singing again, just humming quietly under her breath. But we can hear it. And it almost as though God speaks to one of the shepherds, says, follow the voice. He says it. Let's follow the singing. They turn right. They turn left. They go down the first little corridor. And as they turn to the right and we follow them, we see it. It's the cave. I mean, the cave. The cave. They stop right in front of the door. Very quietly, one says to the other, what do we say? I don't know. Do we go in? I don't know. I mean, what are we going to walk in and hide? We're shepherds. Just tell them what we saw. Luke will actually record that event. We get to hear it right now. They'll duck in one at a time into the cave. Duck in, there goes the nut, duck in, and four, five. They're in the cave. Listen to the conversation. Hi, sorry to interrupt. You tell him. Well, we were there, and then there was this guy, and then he spoke, and he said to come here and find that. If you look into the cave for a second, we can't see much, but we can see Mary's face. Do you see it? It's in the flickering shadows of the lantern that is burning next to what seems to be the animal's trough. We can't see what's in there yet. We know who's in there, but we can't see it. But we can see Mary's face. She is staring past the shepherds, past everyone, just staring into the distance. She doesn't have a face of confusion on her. You can see it in her eyes. She has that smile that is a knowing. And I can feel it, can't you? In fact, Luke will record it later on. That as the shepherds tell the story of the angels, Mary ponders in her heart all that she is experiencing. Because she knows, that Gabriel already told her, she knows who's laying in this manger. Does she understand it fully? Who could? But she knows. And so she stands and ponders the wonder of this moment. The shepherds, I can see their shadows, they're moving. I can hear Joseph's voice. Do you want to see him? Ah, yeah, yes, sir. Come. They're getting to see Jesus right now. Maybe even touching him. Who gets to touch God? They do. Do you want to go in? I mean, do you want to go in? Because I want to go in. I think we should go in. All we have to do is duck our head and move into the cave and we will meet the Messiah, Jesus. But before we do, we should stop here for a second. Just because this moment deserves at the very least our full attention, doesn't it? Because what we're going to encounter inside this cave, you understand, is the collision of everything past and everything future. It is the space in which every promise of God that has ever been made is realized inside of this cave. It is where death will become life. It is where eternity future will become our safe place, not our dangerous space. It is justice itself inside this cave. It is holiness itself inside this cave. It is inside this cave perfection in a way we cannot conceive. In this cave lies our freedom. In this cave lies our light. In this cave lies our life. In this cave lies power. Power that will bring sight to the blind, that will bring life to the dead. In this cave, all things are being made new. And in this cave, every good work that was begun will be brought to its completion. because of who is in this cave. And we do not go into a cave like this without giving it its due moment. This is, folks, listen to me, the most sacred space yet in all of human history. The burning bush was a big deal, I'll give you that. The Ark of the Covenant, you didn't touch that. The Holy of Holies, unbelievable. When God was here in fire and there's a pillar of fire at night and smoke during the day, those were sacred spaces, no doubt, but we could not enter them. When God showed himself to Moses in the rock, that was sacred, but nothing like this. Because in this space, one thing is unique, that not only is God present with us, but we can access him. Because we can walk in here and touch him and not die. Anytime humanity experiences God, we die because sin dies in the presence of God, but not in this space because God will become with us here. And so we're going to go in, but it deserves our full attention. There's going to be another cave, by the way, not but 5 or 6 miles from here, where in 33 years, this baby will lay again, but not as a baby, as a man, and not alive, but dead. And that cave will have a profound moment that we should cue from before we enter this one. A man named Peter will run at full clip to that cave after a woman comes in, several women actually, to his presence and says, the body is gone. And he will run over to that cave and he will duck into it without hesitation. And when he sees the space that this baby as a man was laying just a day before, empty, Luke will record these words. Peter walked out of the cave and marveled at all that Jesus had said and taught. Peter will know in that moment that this baby who will become a man and die a terrible death will raise from the dead and bring us life. And he will marvel at that moment when he sees it. And I will tell you, as we stand at the threshold of this sacred cave, we should cue from Mary who ponders the wonder of these events. And we should cue from Peter who marvels at all of the implications of this baby. And when we've pondered long enough and we've marveled deeply enough, then I think we will be ready to step in. And so I would ask you this, for my sake, if not for yours, let's give this cave a little more time. Maybe we'll wait till tomorrow. Maybe we'll stand here and we'll spend our afternoon, our evening, and our morning just ready to see Jesus, but marveling and pondering the wonder of what waits in this cave for us. And tomorrow, on Christmas Eve, we'll duck our heads, we'll make our way in, and we'll see the face of Jesus and see what he does for us. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for the sacred nature of this space. Give us the courage and the focus over the next 24 hours in the hustle and bustle, the scurrying about of life and busyness and family, just like Bethlehem was experiencing on this very night. And while they experienced that, they completely missed the most sacred moment in all of human history to date that would lead to other great sacred moments as you heal blind, raise dead, die and come back from the dead, bring the Holy Spirit and move the redemptive story that you have throughout generations to the very day from which we are from in 2018. God, may we be fixed and focused here at the entrance of this cave for the next 24 hours. Drive us from the distractions and keep us here. Help us to ponder and marvel at all the implications of you in the flesh, accessible to us. Not only accessible, but here to save us from sin and death that we might have life and freedom. And tomorrow, as we come back to this place and we duck our heads and enter this cave, we beg of you, show us great and unsearchable things that we do not yet know. Show us who you are, that we might know you more profoundly than ever. And move us to be fixed and focused only on you, so that Christmas we would celebrate only you, Jesus. We love you. We can't wait to meet you tomorrow in this cave. Amen.